Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You know, it made me so happy. Yeah.
And Bootsy showed up afterwards.
Bootsy was there. Oh. Bootsy made an appearance.
I had a nice father-son moment pre-Father's Day. This was Saturday night. My son was playing in the Double-A championship game in McLean Little League. And in the sixth inning, he dropped a pop fly. And I screamed. And I do mean screamed. You have to catch that.
That's a hallmark moment, isn't it?
Very constructive. My wife did not talk to me for the rest of the evening.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty, then. We're live at Chatter. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Streets Northwest in Friendship Heights in D.C. Tori Clark is with us. Gary Braun is with us. Michael Kornheiser is with us. Nigel is here to run the board and do the news and make sure we don't have to have too many resets today. We have trivia tonight at Chatter. You're all welcome to come to trivia tonight at Chatter. It was a big hit last Tuesday night. It's going to be a big hit this Tuesday night. I noticed as I was driving in here today, I noticed my son carrying a giant box. And I said, what is that? And I will let him pick up the story from there.
Oh, this is the Buffalo Trace bourbon that you are going to give an official taste review.
When am I supposed to taste that?
Well, I would recommend this evening.
This evening? Okay, I will taste it this evening.
Chance of thunderstorms as well.
The more people it's good for outdoors, and the more people that come in here with various alcohol products, the closer I get to living the dream that was my father's in the house, where he was passed out drunk virtually every day of his life. And I wanted to guard against that in my life. I love my dad very much. Well, my dad worked hard, and my dad had a couple of pops, and then went to sleep in the chair.
The chair.
We only had one chair in the house growing up. My dad was in it, you know, and that was the way it went. So I'm getting precariously close to that. I usually go on the – sometimes I'll go into the couch – and lay down on the couch and then wake up, I don't know, 2-3 days later. Don't really know.
Do you have the clicker in your happened. Hand?
No, because there's no TV in the couch room. Okay. No TV. We didn't have clickers, of course, when my dad... So are you concerned about that? Are you driving me to an early death by having me drink all these things?
No, I actually think you're a very responsible drinker.
I am. I'm good at that. All right, let's start with the...
It's a great start to the show.
Yeah, let's start... Well, who got hurt in that? I mean, did my reputation suffer? Nobody thinks much of me to begin with. So Barry Trotz, also known as Brian Trotz. Speaking of Brian, Brian's at the bar having breakfast.
He is.
Right. So that's good.
Ignoring us.
Barry Trotz quits yesterday. They can't negotiate a new deal, and Barry Trotz wants a lot of money, a lot of years.
They have a deal.
Well, he wants an extension. He wants a lot of money for a lot of years, and the Capitals are unwilling to give it to him, so Barry Trotz leaves. Now, this is, I'm sorry, you know, there was no reporting, none, zero, that said this might happen. None, zero, with one exception. If you remember at the end of the Columbus series, where the Capitals came back from 0-2 at home and won 4 in a row, leading me to conclude they were going to win the Stanley Cup, there is an exchange between John Tortorella and Barry Trotz. And Barry Trotz, and you don't have to be a real good lip reader on this one. It's very evident that Barry Trotz says, and I'm quoting now, I'm gone, I'm not coming back. Barry Trotz later denies that, which is ridiculous.
Did he think he had lost the series?
No, he wasn't. So he laid that out there for anyone to speculate about this. Around that same period of time, but prior to that, I was in New York talking to a person who shall be nameless, but who has some knowledge of the National Hockey League and the sport in general, who said to me, doesn't matter what happens, Barry Trotz is not coming back. I said, really, what is he going to do? And he said, he's going to coach the Rangers. He's going to quit to coach the Rangers. I kept that in the back of my head for 5 or 6 weeks now. But the Rangers, a couple of weeks ago, hired a coach. They had a very young man, I believe, who might have been the coach at BC, BC or BU, which often wins the Bean Pot, a really prestigious college tournament. So that job was not available at all. If you go back in the history here, if you go back, we know that he had no contract extension. Barry wrote a lot about this, and Barry wrote correctly, I believed, that if he had lost early in the playoffs, after years of losing early in the playoffs before their time, that's not the case this year, But in prior years, when they had won the division and the conference and finished ahead of everybody else in the entire NHL, and they had gone out early, Barry wrote, the Capitals right now have a wait-and-see attitude with this guy. They are not going to give him an extension. They're going to see how he does in the playoffs. My personal belief has been and is to this moment that had they lost in any other round, they'd have fired him. Because they would have said, what do we need you for? They'd have fired this guy. And by the way, I believe justifiably. Hockey has the quickest trigger of any of the major sports. Guys come and go all the time in hockey. Apparently, there's only one or two guys in the entire hockey league, and that's 30 teams that have been at their squad, been the coach of their squad for 5 years or more. There's only two. There's only two. The guy at Chicago who's won three cups, and some other guy somewhere, and I don't even know who he is. And if you walked in here right now, I wouldn't know who he was. So it seemed to me that the thing that would keep Trotz surprised them. Trotz surprised everyone.
Overperformed.
They all surprised us.
Yes.
They surprised us. Don't give me the rock the red, you know, pro forma stuff. Everybody is surprised that the Capitals actually won. So what they should have done is immediately found a way to, within 48 hours, to sign and announce that Barry Trotz was staying. But they didn't, and he walked. He simply walked. Everyone assumes he will go to the Islanders. Maybe he will. I'm going to suggest this, and this will make the Rock the Redders very angry. I'm going to say this is it for them. Not because Trotz is leaving. I would analogize them to the Dallas Mavericks when Dirk Nowitzki, deep in his career, won the NBA championship in a rather surprising result. And they didn't come close again. This is the two most important guys on this team, other than the goalie, the two most important skaters, Backstrom and Ovechkin, are well into their 30s, are they not?
Yes.
This is not a young team.
That's right.
This is not a particularly young team. They just did the greatest thing in their lives. They're still drinking.
I was going to say, when Ovi's...
They're not sober yet.
What do you think Ovi's reaction will be when he sobers up?
He has no idea. He has no idea what has happened. So this is... So Trotz probably figures, and I think correctly, that was it. Let's get out. Apparently, there's a story in the paper that hockey coaches do this with some regularity. They don't do this in other sports. The most memorable one of these that I can remember, and I'm old enough to remember this, Johnny Keene in 1964, as the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, beat the Yankees, quit the Cardinals, went to manage the Yankees. Didn't have any particular success. But this is... If he goes to the Islanders, fine. People say, well, there are no other jobs. No. There are other jobs. You fire the guy you've got to hire the guy who just won the Stanley Cup, to hire the guy who changed Alex Ovechkin into a leader and a team player. Oh, you fire your guy for that.
And the guy, what do you all think? The guy who in his 18 prior seasons was 39-50 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That was surprised? This guy.
Surprised by this?
So,
I had this advance information, but the reporting hasn't been.
I am surprised, and you mentioned that. I don't remember if it was on the air or off to us. But okay, I remember you mentioning that weeks ago, but I hadn't thought about it since. And Trotz, according to the reporting I read, had a clause in his contract, or perhaps I should say the cap.
A trigger.
Had a clause in his contract that if he won the Stanley Cup, he had the option of accepting a $300,000 raise, which would have taken him, I guess, from 1.5 to 1.8.
Hockey coaches, which is like baseball managers, don't make anywhere near what basketball and football coaches
do. So it's interesting to me in that the Caps, I guess, sort of have said, that's the option if you want it. This existing clause, you can enact it, take your 20% raise and stay on board. To your point, if they wanted him, if it was important that they retain him, I would have thought that they would have negotiated, said, okay, in good faith, you know, we'll tear this up and we'll get you.
They didn't want to give him 5 years.
Right.
Is there any other way to read this? They didn't think he was that good or worth it, and they don't want to break their
Or they know how hard it is in this sport because of the cap to repeat and figured it's just...
Tori, your family is totally
good.
Locked into the Caps, so I'm interested.
Totally locked into the Caps. I think there's sort of a touch of sadness. It kind of puts the end to all the euphoria. Maybe we should all stop drinking now.
Except for the players who continue to drink.
Exactly. But people who follow it on a regular basis don't seem that surprised. Say, this is business. This is what happens in hockey.
Yes.
And McClellan, they all seem to be very upfront and transparent. No, we wanted it to work, but it didn't work. I think it's hilarious that right after they won the Stanley Cup, Trotz said a couple of times, they were saying, are you staying? He goes, you know, I want clarity of thinking. and I'm drinking too much right now. Maybe if they had wanted him, they should have done it right away.
There's no weeping here. Nobody's weeping. This isn't Joe
Gibbs.
Well, a lot
of talk already of Todd Reirden, who's been an assistant on their bench for a while. No.
Is that maybe why they said, we've got a guy that we love, that we'd love to take over, so we don't care if you leave?
Yeah, there was some. I thought it was kind of weird that I understood why they didn't lock in Trotz, right? Because his body of work in the playoff season was not good. They did lock in the two assistants, including Reirden. And McClellan said yesterday, we've been training, we've been grooming Reirden to be a head coach, either for us or someone else. So they feel like they've got a very good option. But it all seems very businesslike, no hard feelings.
So I would point this out, too. Barry wrote a variety of columns about Barry Trotz. Barry's Verluga wrote about Barry Trotz, that his future was on the line, at least in the early series.
Yeah.
Once or twice or three times he said this. Not once did Capitals management come out and give him a vote of confidence. They knew what was in the air, and not once did they step up and say, hey, we want this. I didn't hear we want this guy. Michael, this is the first major sports championship.
Yeah, I got to enjoy that championship for all of a week and a half. Yeah. That was great. No, it's a sad reminder as to the reality of modern sports. As Tori's saying, this is a business. They clearly did not see him as their long-term solution. You're looking at the amount of revenue they were able to generate on T-shirts, the extra beer sales, the added money for his contract is immaterial. If you want the guy, you're just willing to pay that. And you look at what the ownership has done on the other side of the court, giving a coach who has won absolutely nothing,
Scott Brooks,
the entire world.
If you're Barry Trotz, you're saying,
give me half of that money. I'm actually going out there and winning. So I think on both sides, there's probably a rift that had been growing that we were unaware of over these, this great 6-week stretch. So this is sports.
In Barry's story today, and he makes this point, and he does it very, very well. He talks about Scott Brooks. He says just making $7 million a year. Because he's not particularly
Monopoly.
Good. He was given 5 years at $35 million. Out of nowhere. He hadn't won anything. He hadn't won anything either in Oklahoma City. He hadn't. But he got this big deal, and those are basketball salaries. I don't anticipate any gnashing of teeth here. I don't. No. I think people are going to say, he did a great job. We're really happy we won. Let's move on. Yep. It's okay.
It's not as though they lost Ovechkin.
No.
Like, that would be, people would be committing suicide.
He had no history here. He'd been here for 3 or 4 years. And hockey coaches, I don't know if they're necessarily fungible, but boy, they come and go in a very short time.
Right.
All over the league, all the time. It's like the Capitals are not the exception for churning coaches. They all do it. The guy who took over the Islanders, Lou Lamoriello, used to fire coaches when the playoffs were starting at Jersey. Yes. He did it every year. He fired a guy every year when the playoffs were about to start. So we got this story last night, so we were ready. We were prepped to go on the air.
Who broke it? Do you know?
I don't know.
Or did they just put out the announcement to everyone?
I think it was a Twitter deal.
There was someone on
Andrew
Twitter.
Andrew somebody,
first,
whose name I'm unfamiliar with. And it was not denied. So this is at about, we're ready to go downstairs around 4. And what I mean I'm ready to go downstairs. Wilbon may or may not have shown up at the show yet. And then we had to add the show. And we decided, let's add it at the end of the A's. It's not the first story. Because a hockey coach. You don't lead with hockey coach quits. It's as simple as that. But you have to put it in to the main block of stories. Because it's a big deal, but it's not a huge deal. All right, we'll get out of here now. Brian Windhorst will join us when we return.
That's right.
I'd like to talk to him about a number of things, particularly Kawhi Leonard and what's going to happen with him, because this now seems interesting. The notion that somehow San Antonio will accommodate him and trade him to the Lakers is, to me, insane. Just insane. We'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the first Leaf read, and I want to, before we even start the read, I want to say that my friend Steve Watson has been looking for, we had this conversation, we were playing a couple of weeks ago, looking for a wine club to join, and I told him about First Leaf, and he said he would do it. I don't know if he's done it. I think, Michael, I think I have the ability to sign him up and get him the first box free or something like that.
You do, if you look towards the end of that read. I think it'll show you how.
I'm going to do this with Steve Watson, because and he's a friend of Kelleher's. He lives right near Kelleher. So I'm going to do it for him. The more wine you taste and rate, the better they customize your box based on the wines you like. I go through this all the time. I try to rate the wines. I give the cards to Michael and the Wine Tyrant. to take home, and then they lay on the table for weeks. And so I don't know if my rating...
Yet somehow they end up in the system.
Is my rating system working?
How's
you
the wine?
You tell me.
The wine is good, but...
Then it's working.
You know, the wine is good. When you sign up with my personal link, whatever in God's name that is, you get your 3-pack of introductory wine for only $15 plus free shipping. If you then rate your first 3 wines, you'll get an extra $10 off your next box of wine. And this is not... It's a box of wine, but it's not wine in a box.
Yes.
You know, this is not at Sheetz, you know, where you get it in a box. It's not.
Take some motor oil.
When it comes
and
to buying
wine,
most of our choices are made out of habit. We don't remember how we found our favorites. We just know that when we're at the checkout, those same brands and bottles are in our carts week after week. First Leaf is a new online wine club that's putting a stop to boring wine buying by helping you discover your new favorite wines. Every shipment is curated. I love that word. Such a smart word. Every shipment is curated to your but it's overused. Curated.
Yeah,
it's
well, like, you've said it 3 times
in 10
seconds.
You know the phrase now, we have to unpack this? Enough. Enough with that. Every segment is curated to your
unless
taste.
Unless you're moving.
Based on your ratings of the
30, wines. 30,000 foot
I started by answering 3 quick questions about my wine drinking preference, and I answered red, red,
and
red.
Quickly.
First Leaf created an introductory 3-pack of wine for me based on my flavor profile. That's hard to say. Let's flavor fave. Best part is you'll get all 3 for just $5 each. These wines should go for like $20 a piece. When my bottles arrived, I tasted and then rated them online. I rated them. Explain how I rate them.
Dad rates them on a card with his handwriting that looks like chicken scratch, and he just goes, like, with an exclamation point.
Good.
His handwriting.
Very good.
Hard to read like chicken scratch, but beautiful. Not like chicken scratch.
First Leaf took my ratings and then selected new wines based on my taste for the next shipment, which was confiscated by the wine tyrant of Tunlaw, who said, no, it has to go to my sister. No.
Well, she's out of town now, so it's
all yours.
Got rerouted.
Their experts are constantly exploring new wines for me to taste and rate. It's amazing how accurate they are at selecting wines that I love because I'm easy. After rating my first 3 wines, the next shipment I got was almost perfect. 5 out of 6 wines were spot on. Wow, this sounds like they wrote this for me because I think that was.
And had
true.
You ordered your wine when he started this read, you'd have it by now.
Yeah, it's
too interesting.
Anyway, I appreciate that their minute-long read is now 5 minutes.
With First Leaf, you never have to worry about spending money on a bad bottle of wine. They guarantee you love the wine you buy, or they'll give you your money back. So try First Leaf Wine Club today, where buying great wine is simple. Sign up with my personal link, and you'll get an exclusive intro offer. I guess that's introductory. I guess they couldn't spell introductory all the way. They just want to say intro.
Didn't trust you to pronounce it.
It's 3 bottles of wine for only $15 plus free shipping. That's not all. If you rate these 3 wines, you'll get an extra $10 off your next box. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/Tony. That's tryfirstleaf/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tim Wildsmith has sent in music before, has he not?
I believe
Nashville,
he has,
Tennessee?
Yes.
He writes, in honor of the College World Series, here's a sleepy little song called Omaha from my 2010 album, Little Armor. I doubt that the College World Series is a bucket list item for most sports fans, but absolutely should be. Omaha is a sneaky, cool little city filled with great food and some of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And for 2 weeks in June, it becomes a melting pot of baseball fans from all over the country. If you like this song, you can find more in all of the usual places. Give my best to the crew. The show is consistently one of the best parts of my day. Tim Wildsmith's music is very good.
Yes.
College World Series is cool. And Omaha, by the way, Omaha featured prominently in 2 great, great George Clooney movies, Up in the Air and Michael Clayton. Omaha featured prominently.
That's right.
And speaking of Omaha, guess where Brian Windhorst lives?
In Omaha?
Lincoln?
Omaha. No, he lives in Omaha. Brian joins us now. How's the weather in Omaha? Didn't you have bad weather for the College World Series the last couple of days?
Yes. It's either been 100 degrees or pouring rain, but the outlook the rest of the week is much better.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The College World Series has 2 days every single year where it rained out with like storms that are biblical, that frogs come down from the sky, right?
You know, when I grew up in the Midwest, and then I also lived in Florida and New York for a while, we had thunderstorms in the afternoon in the summer because the heat would come up and you'd have these pop-up storms.
Right.
In Nebraska, you can have a storm at 7 in the morning that's Category 5. You can have one at 11 in the morning or at midnight. They come nonstop 24 hours a day, when they're rolling. People around here are happy because while Omaha is very much of a metropolis, when it rains, it means better for the crops. And ultimately, the farming is the core industry of the Midwest. So people around here don't complain about it when it rains.
That's good. All right, let's start with Kawhi Leonard. There's a lot of things to ask about. But, I mean, to me, it's apparently become public knowledge that Kawhi Leonard, unlike LaMarcus Aldridge, is serious about saying, I've had it here, I'm tired here, and I want to go to Los Angeles. I would start with this. Why would Greg Popovich ever accommodate that wish and keep this guy in the same conference where he plays?
Well, Tony, first off, I have to say this has been remarkable discussion through the media between these two sides. Let me just take you through the last week real quick. Adrian Wojnarowski wrote a story last week, and in the middle of that story, he says, and I'm sure that this came from the Spurs organization, I can't say, you know, Adrian hasn't told me this, but I have a good feel for this. He says in the story, the Spurs are not going to offer Kawhi Leonard the $219 million max contract this summer. They're going to make him earn it, have a good year, and then get it after this year. To me, that was a message that the Spurs were sending to Kawhi Leonard via the media, via Woj. And my guess, although I haven't been told this, but my guess is that that was the last salvo, because if he's not going to get the offer based on what he's done, based on the fact that he's had a finals MVP for them, what's the point? What's the point from Kawhi's side? So Kawhi announces his trade demand through the media, not to the team, through the media. Again, very unusual for the Spurs, but it's happening through the media, different media members. Then Woj comes back and says that there's no way that the Spurs are trading him to the Lakers. Again, a message via the media right to Kawhi Leonard. So this is all spilling out very publicly, very unusually, unlike the LaMarcus Aldridge trade demand, which was issued privately, met with a no privately, and worked through privately, and ended up resulting in a lucrative contract extension last summer and a great season for LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yes.
This is just not how the Spurs do business. And so I'm beyond the fact that we're looking at a potentially a top five player changing teams, Tony, I have just been flabbergasted to watch this play out. Both sides, by the way, hurling mud through the media like it's a poorly operated NBA team and player relationship, which is not how these guys operate. So in a vacuum, Tony, I agree with what you said. If we assume that the Celtics and the Sixers are going to make bids for Kawhi when the time comes, I don't think that the Lakers can compete with those two bids. If you go straight on the fact that they're in a different conference and the fact that they have better draft picks and they have better young players to offer, in my opinion, I think it goes to the highest bidder between those two teams. But one thing I've learned in 15 years covering the NBA, Tony, and as somebody who falls under the talent umbrella yourself, talent can make things happen. And if Kawhi Leonard wants to play dirty enough, get down into the mud enough, and especially be vocal about it, he can force his way to just about anywhere he wants by using threats. I don't know if that's in his DNA. I don't know if that's what they're willing to do. But I'm not ruling out the Lakers for that simple fact that I've seen this happen before. I've seen players say, you're going to trade me there, and they've gotten it done.
Well, it's interesting because I think Kawhi Leonard has 1 year left on a contract. And if he does, he could just say right now, you know, you can trade me anywhere you want. I understand the legality of that. But when that 1 year is done, I'm going to go and do what I want to do. Can he say that? And I don't even think that's – I think that's well within his right to say that. And that would, of course, chase away real talent coming back from Philadelphia or Boston.
That's right. He hasn't sort of come out and said that or had his agent say that. But that's what you would do. You would basically come out and say – I will only play in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Trading me to any team is futile. It's a waste of time, money, and resources. I will only do that. If he comes out and does that, it really puts the Spurs in the corner. He hasn't yet, and maybe he won't. But he does ultimately have the trump card that he can pull out. And the Spurs, basically taking every asset that the Lakers have versus – a leverage trade with Philly or Boston where they're selling for pennies on the dollar, you're taking the Lakers trade. And that's ultimately where we could end up. It's not guaranteed, but that's possibly the way this could go.
So you're thinking, as opposed to my thinking. You're thinking the Lakers have a greater chance of landing him than I think they do, because I think Popovich would not do that, because it hurts him specifically. So
I agree, Tony. I think if all things are equal in a vacuum, what have you, outside the real world, I think he goes to Boston. I think Boston has the best situation, the best assets. Philly can get close, but I think it would be Boston. That's who the Spurs want to make a deal with. But here's the thing. Like, the way Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford have operated over the years, they've had a certain level of doing business, but this is outside their zone. I mean, to use a phrase from The Godfather, what you need here is a wartime consigliere.
Yeah, yeah.
And Popovich and R.C. are brilliant at formulating a plan, executing a plan, and staying loyal to a plan. But this is outside the plan. This is not something the Spurs have dealt with before. So I would be surprised if he gets traded to the Lakers, but I absolutely think that's the way it could end up.
Okay, let me move on to Shaquille O'Neal's advice for LeBron, which is stop chasing rings, which is very easy for Shaquille to say because he's sitting on four and LeBron doesn't have four at the moment. He's got three. What do you make of what Shaquille said, and where do you – I mean, it's like if LeBron satisfies Shaq, what does he do, go to Sacramento? Does he bury himself for the rest of his life? I mean,
Wizards.
I Wilbon agreed with Shaq, and I just looked at him, and I said, I could not disagree more with this. You play to win. Go find a team that you think you're going to win the most games with. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on your definition of the word chasing, not to sound like a lawyer. But, chasing a ring to me would be to go sign for the minimum for the Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, that would be chasing a ring. If he signed with the Lakers, I mean, let's say that the Lakers don't get Kawhi Leonard. Let's say they let me use something sort of more realistic. Let's say Paul George stays in Oklahoma City, which I think is a decent chance. Let's say LeBron decides to sign with the Lakers, and their other signing that they make is Clint Capella. I'm just throwing a name out there, Capella. I don't think that'll happen. Like, is that ring chasing, or is that just repositioning? I think that definition is pretty narrow. I think if he goes to Philadelphia hasn't won a ring since 1983. Is that ring chasing? I don't think so. Here's what I think at the bottom line is. LeBron is very comfortable with his legacy. He believes he has accomplished everything that he's ever needed to. At this point, he's just putting the touches on it. He doesn't care what anybody says about his finals record, that he's 3-6. He knows that he was up an uphill battle in almost all those series. He really doesn't care what it does to his legacy. I think a driving factor in this decision is going to be happiness. Where can he go, Tony, where he can say that I'm going to be happy? And I think he's going to spend this next 3-4 weeks trying to define what he thinks will make him happy. And that very well could be staying at home. You know, that is on the board. I don't think it's something that, the Cavs have a tall task in front of them to improve at the same level as some of the other teams are competing with them. But happiness to him may be staying put. And so, in my viewpoint on this, I'm going to give him a wide berth and a lot of latitude, because at the end of this, if he says, this is what my family and I want, and it results in being on a championship contender, fine. And if it results on staying in Cleveland and potentially fighting to make it to the conference finals next year, that's fine with me too.
Okay. The draft is Thursday, I think. I think everyone thinks that DeAndre Ayton will be number one in the draft to Phoenix. And I guess it opens up after that. The most interesting player is probably the European kid who we've seen on highlight reels, Doncic, but we never saw him play, don't know anything about him. Where does he go? How good is he from what you hear?
That's the draft, Tony. The draft is, what does Sacramento do? What Sacramento does will set the next eight picks, potentially force or kill possible trades. Sacramento is the crux, the leveraging point of this draft. Doncic is a fascinating – talking to different people about him is fascinating. And I've only watched him on YouTube, Tony. I will never tell you that I'm a draft expert. I spend the draft season covering the playoffs. But talking to people who watch him, I hear everything from he's the best teenager to come to the NBA since LeBron to he's got, you know, mid-major athleticism. You know, that's the kind of range here. If the Kings select him, and one thing you have to realize with the Kings don't have their draft pick next year. They've traded it. It's now in Boston's hands. The Kings are really incentivized to get better right away because there's no more building now, for at least for the next year.
Right.
And Doncic would help them. He's a very polished player. He's the best player in Europe at 19 or 20, whatever he is. He would definitely help them win more games. So if they take him, I think there's a sort of a natural order. If they pass, Tony, and the thing that really gets interesting is if they take Michael Porter Jr., because, again, there are executives in this league who have told me Michael Porter Jr. is the most talented or the second most talented in this draft. And if you are taking pure on talent and your doctors have said, okay, Michael Porter Jr. may be the pick. And if that happens, if Sacramento does that, all of a sudden Doncic slides back. A couple of guys who were maybe expected to be around at 6 or 7 may be available a little later. And I think you could see a lot of action. So to me, the Sacramento Kings hold this draft and the activity level of this draft in their hands, and they are the ones who have the big decisions. A lot of years, the number one team has the big decision, then the number two team takes who's left. Sam Presti took Kevin Durant, not because he thought Kevin Durant was a superior player to Greg Oden, but because Greg Oden wasn't on the board.
Right.
In this case, in this draft, Ayton is the general belief to be number one. It's who's number two that is the big question.
Thank you, Brian. That's very nice to have you on the show. It always makes me happy. Brian Windhorst, thanks, boys and girls. Very, very nice. We will come back with news. And Michael, I think it's your read now.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
So it's Michael's read now, right?
That's right.
Go ahead.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It's the second half of June. School is out, so you know what that means.
Is school out completely now?
For most school systems.
Okay.
It's officially underpants season.
Yes.
You've definitely heard me talk about MeUndies, you know, the fun, comfy undies that feel as good as they look. To those of you who haven't tried them yet, listen up. You can get incredible underwear sent to your door with MeUndies, meaning no more hunting around for the perfect pair at a crowded store and eventually settling for good enough. And you know, when you're hunting around for underpants, you always feel like you settle for good enough.
All the time.
MeUndies are made with a sustainably sourced material from beechwood trees. Their naturally soft fiber makes a fabric that won't sag down or ride up. Trust me, once you put on a pair, you'll get it. And this is where we go off script. It felt like it was 100 plus degrees, so sagging down, riding up, forget the soft fiber. That beechwood tree, you can feel the cool breeze rustling through those beechwood trees.
I'm trying to get beechwood trees and plant them near my house, or certainly at the little house.
And when it's this hot outside, remember that they have the no-show socks. So even if it gets hot, your feet might sweat a little bit as you're walking around town going out to dinner. These are great when you still want to look good in the summer heat.
You can't see them?
Cannot see them.
They're invisible socks?
They are invisible socks.
That's great.
MeUndies is so sure you'll love your first pair that if you're not happy, they'll do whatever they can to get you into the right pair. And if they can't, keep them, and they'll refund you. So it really is risk-free to try the best underwear ever. And if you're already part of the MeUndies fam, tell your friends about it through their referral program. They'll get a discount, and you'll get store credit. Win-win. There's nothing like sharing underpants with your friends.
Very true.
Still not sure? Well, MeUndies has a deal for Tony's listeners. First-time purchasers get 15% off their first pair of MeUndies and free shipping. That's 15% off plus free shipping and a guarantee that you and your MeUndies will be very happy together. Ask the underpants. Get your butt over to MeUndies.com and treat yourself. To get your 15% off your first pair, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/Tony K. That's MeUndies.com/Tony K.
It's a lovely read.
Nicely done.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Train Song, the debut single by the Dead Levy, an old-school rock and roll blues band formed in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. They are great friends of mine, and I would love to have their single played on the TK airwaves. Dead Levy are about as old-school as it can get with their style and sound. It sounds like the Steve Miller Band, doesn't it? They are currently on tour in Alberta and Saskatchewan. Their debut album is set to be released on June 29th. which is also available for pre-order on iTunes. You may be surprised, but you have quite the following north of the border. I've been a fan of PTI for years, as well as the Tony Kornheiser Show. It's something I and many others look forward to each day. Please keep up with the great shows. And P.S., we love the wave of the Canadian flag on the show each and every day. This is from Brandon. This is really good.
This is great. And of course, this is really good. Dead Levy. Yeah, more cowbell.
Yeah, this is...
It's really good old school.
It's really good. Michael, if people like the Dead Levy want to send in their stuff, how do they do it?
Send in your original music by emailing it to the show at jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And I'm sure the Bootsy One code is extinct now because it's past Father's Day.
Bootsy One is the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, really?
In celebration of his one-year birthday, which comes
Sunday.
Up in a week.
Yeah.
I think the code is extended. And we have some new TK Show gear arriving, I'm hoping, any day, including some golf items.
And this is for...
That is at shop.tonykornheisershow.com.
Is there a theme for his birthday party?
You know, there's a lot of pressure around a one-year-old's birthday party. Apparently, birthday parties at that age are just for the parents. But we don't really have any parent friends. So I think it's just going to be us and immediate family.
There's a box of Buffalo Trace you could maybe...
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Bob Smith sent me stuff. He says, as a native Washingtonian, I take great delight in the success of our local teams, especially the Cup champions. The Nationals are fielding an excellent team this season. Matter of opinion.
Getting better all
Speaking
the time.
Of baseball, the All-Star Game approaches. I thought you'd appreciate some relevant memorabilia for Chatter customers. It's the 1962 All-Star Game official program. Gets very little coverage sitting in my man cave. Used to keep score at that game. It was used by my friend Ian French, who played semi-pro ball himself. So he says he's having age issues and doesn't know I'm bequeathing it to Chatter. So we sort of have it without everybody's permission. Anyway, this is they passed on the all-you-can-eat crab feast, but they sent this. This is from
cool
1962.
Looking. 1962 oh, program. 1962.
The All-Star Game was here.
That's fantastic.
50-cent wow. program.
By the way, Tony, you mentioned that tonight is trivia night here at
yes.
Chatter. I forgot
yes.
to give you your daily trivia question.
Yes.
This is for everyone. What was the name of Michael Corleone's first wife?
Apollonia.
Well done.
Okay, everybody knows she was. It was that terrible accident.
Did not end well.
Kaboom.
Apollonia. Boom.
Yes.
You know.
She could drive well.
Apollonia. She yes. She was
briefly
great.
And could say the days of the week very well.
Yes,
as
but,
I recall.
Yeah, that was it.
To the World Cup, Mr. Tony. Catch you up on the scores from yesterday. Sweden over South Korea. A bitter match, 1-0.
Who had that? Who had Sweden over South Korea in the audience?
I think everyone did. Belgium. 3-0 over Panama.
Yeah.
But, of course, the big win yesterday. England.
Yay.
That's right, England. 2-1 over Tunisia. Harry Kane with a big goal there.
I thought he had two goals.
Well, yeah, but the goal yeah. that won it for them.
Yeah.
But at the end, when yes. he actually died,
yeah.
it was very
it was
sudden.
Very, very sudden.
The South Korean coach, apparently, well, you know what? I don't want to say this without, I got to check my facts.
Yeah. No.
There you go.
Okay. Big infestation
happy to
of bugs, evidently, in those games.
Oh,
in
really?
England, yeah, there's some swarmy gnat-like things that were driving them all crazy.
I was unaware of that.
But it's breeding season of that particular gnat, according to what read, and so they should be able to move past that soon.
If they had called Paul Manafort... They would have had that.
And by the way, I should pass along congratulations. I think you know yesterday I was calling the matches for the City Open Wild Card.
Has that opened yet?
No, it was the Wild Card entries
yesterday. When
are they
having that tournament?
That is the last, it's that final week of July, first few days of August.
Oh, so why are they doing it in June?
Well, this is the Wild Card entries. They get the chance to play in the tournament. They've got to play themselves in, and now they've got a few weeks to prepare for it.
They had a great window with the weather. They just wanted to take advantage
of it. Oh, yeah, it was brutal out there. And these guys had to play two matches in a row in basically 105-degree weather. But
well, you had to be there.
I did, too, but I was not.
Was not playing.
Yeah, I was not moving around, but it was still bloody hot.
So I did get the facts on my South Korea story that I didn't want to misstate. But South Korea's football coach, soccer, according to this story, revealed he used an unusual tactic to outfox opponents in the run-up to the high-stakes World Cup games in Russia, swapping players' jerseys numbers to sow confusion about their identities. When asked about it, he said, and I'm quoting, I heard that Western people don't recognize Asian people's faces at once, so that was my little trick to confuse the opponents.
That's illegal. You're not supposed to do that. That's deliberate subterfuge.
There
you're not
you
supposed
go.
To do that.
He did it.
Hunter Kuntz and Natasha Subash were your winners yesterday to complete the wild card entries for the City Open.
Oh, thank you.
Which I would have completed if Gary had not just interrupted.
You can only get that information.
What else? Yeah.
Yes. Big news for the Nationals. They trade for a closer. Let's see, what's his name? Kelvin Herrera
for
the Kansas City Royals. Having a great year. 14 saves.
He was on the World Series team, wasn't he?
ERA. There was talk about getting him then, wasn't there?
ERA just over one. They go, the Nats give up outfielder Blake Perkins, third baseman Kelvin Gutierrez.
These are not major league players at the moment.
Right-hander Johans Morel, who I think is just 17.
No, these are not.
So this appears to be a very good trade.
Kansas City is selling off assets.
Bigger than that, you upgrade in a position where you need to upgrade without involving any names such as Soto and Robles.
That's right, and you can get rid of Ryan Madsen now, who cannot get out of an inning.
It was a tough day for him the other day.
So I have the baseball notes here. The baseball notes from George Mitrovich, which arrived at my house at 2:04 in the morning. And he writes, the Yankees and Nationals played makeup games in Washington last night when the Nationals' 19-year-old rookie phenom, Juan Soto, hit a very long home run. Upper deck,
back.
Right field.
Back row.
Deep.
That's the upper deck. Yeah.
Deep. That will go into the record books. ESPN's Tim Kirkjian tells us as having been hit 5 days before Soto was called up to play in the major leagues. What? Because the game was scheduled to have been played on May 16th and was indeed played to some degree on May 16th, but was washed out due to heavy rain in the Washington area 3 days running. A storm that cost the Nationals their homestand against the Yankees. Two of the games lost were made up yesterday. But because baseball is wonderful, yes, but weird also, yes, the game goes into the books as having been played on May 16th. Thus, Juan Soto gets credit for a home run that he hit in the major leagues when he was still in the minor leagues. My only question is, will Soto's home run have an asterisk by it? And Major League Baseball says yes.
So Ford for
isn't, that, work, isn't right? that interesting?
It's a great asterisk.
He's had six, I think, home runs so far.
Correct. Three against the Yankees.
There's two problems with Juan Soto. I think they're correctable. One is that he's not a very good outfielder right now, and he gets turned around, and he's just not very good. And two, he gets picked off base a lot.
Yeah.
He's not a very good base runner.
Makes him a good fit for this team.
But he can really hit, and he can hit. He's got opposite field power, too. And when you have Bryce Harper now hitting, I don't know, 215.
213.
Like, 20. I watched last night in the second game. Yeah, he shaved off his
beard.
That's
the lead.
In the second game, they have first and third with two out. And the reason they have first and third with two out is because, was it that same inning when, no, it couldn't have been the same inning.
At they had one, two on with no out.
Two on with no out and two strikeouts in a row. Mark Reynolds, who hasn't had a hit in a month, struck out, and after
12
him.
12 pitch at bat, I think.
What was next? Was it Trey Turner was next?
No.
Defoe?
No. It was somebody else. Was it Rendon?
I think it's.
It doesn't matter, but you're losing the game by two. You have first and third with nobody out, and you don't score. You strike out twice. They brought in a right-hander, and they struck out two guys in a row. Reynolds was one. Who was the other? There's got to be somebody if you look at the box.
Looking at maybe Daniel Murphy?
Yes. Daniel Murphy, in a lefty-righty situation, Daniel Murphy, the ball's really low.
Took the first strike.
On his knees, swinging on the third strike. And then Harper, with first and third, two outs, doesn't hit the ball either. Doesn't hit the ball either. They're, I don't know, five games, six games above 500. They don't look particularly good right now. They don't. I know a lot of guys are out, but that's the world
of
sports.
That's baseball.
You know, people are out. So, what else?
Do you think they'll make the playoffs?
They look better than they did yesterday.
Yes. Their playoff team?
I think they will, but they don't look good.
I think you need to remember they don't have a trip out west for the rest of the season. I think St. Louis might be their biggest trip. And bigger news coming out of that mini-series yesterday is I don't think any of these Yankees are going to be in the Home Run Derby.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I know that Judge said he was not. Yeah. He said he was not. Stanton either?
And I don't know why Harper would go into it, and he always said he would when it was in D.C.
He said he was going to, and we should hold him to his word. Yeah, because it could be the last appearance he makes.
Yeah, and it's not like it's going to screw his batting stance up.
No.
Because he's not having a great
year. Well, shaving was the big deal. He went 0 for 4.
Did he do that to impress the Yankees? See, look, I can be clean shaven.
Yeah, that was the conspiracy theory. Yeah.
The Yankees don't. The Yankees may want him, but the Yankees actually don't need him.
The Yankees probably want Soto more the way he's played against him.
That's true. Staying with baseball, an interesting outing the other day for Milwaukee's Brewers reliever Adrian Hauser.
Are you aware of this, Tori?
I'm not.
Well, this is the mom and you will be very interested in this.
Yes, so he came on to pitch in the eighth inning, and after a few warm-up pitches, went to the back of the mound and then threw up.
Aww.
So the manager came out, gave him a bottle of water. The ground crew came up to, put the green sawdust out there that we've all seen.
Soak up the vomit.
Then he threw a few more warm-up tosses. So, I'm still good to go. Allowed a double to open the inning. Then he got the pinch hitter, Yasmeel Valentin, to ground out, and then he vomited a second time.
Second time. That's a pro move.
Yes.
Like, anybody can vomit once. Usually right. That's it.
Bluto Blutoski.
Yeah, but twice on the mound in the same inning.
It's a Rod Strickland situation.
And then got out of the inning.
Yeah.
And then shut it down.
That's an intimidation factor right there.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
It's my
that
favorite
would distract
pitcher.
You.
Doogie Howser, right? What's his name?
Adrian Doogie Howser.
Yeah,
yes, there you go. Going back to World Cup for just a moment, Landon Donovan has created a little bit of a controversy by clamoring for people to root for Mexico. So people pushed back and said...
Well, wait. It's not clamoring for people to root for Mexico. He took money from Wells Fargo Bank.
Yes.
Which has been in the news lately as not being the greatest bank in the world. And
we're really sorry.
They're rebranding. He took money... And the advertisements say, we're not in it, but let's root for Mexico.
Right.
He took money to do this. And you can't just say that he's... It's more than that. Now, he has played in the Mexican League.
Yes.
He has ties to Mexico. That's fine. But he took money to do this, and...
And there's been a lot of pushback to
yes,
it.
Yes, there has.
Particularly for some players who played with Landon Donovan, including Kobe Jones, who got a concussion when one of the Mexican players headbutted him during one of their matches years ago.
Do you know what the Mexican fans do to the United States? This is a significant rivalry in this hemisphere. They drink beer and then urinate in the cup and throw it on the American players. That alone, for me, is enough to say I'm not endorsing them.
Not sure.
This has happened to Landon Donovan. Other players on the team have said, really? You're going to endorse them? And Landon Donovan came back at them, particularly players of Mexican descent, and said, look what's happening in this country. Maybe you ought to root for them. And they said, don't you ever tell us something like that. Don't, you know, stay in your own lane about what our ethnicity is. Shut up. And I personally think Landon Donovan has made a significant error here.
Yes.
I'm with Landon Donovan, especially now when the United States is having some problems with lots of other countries because of one particular person. Anybody reaching out in this hemisphere saying, can't we kind of root for each other right now? I think that's a good thing.
How about a bag of urine on your head?
I'd be willing to bet. I'd be willing to bet some of Nigel's colleagues
worse.
And relatives back home have
the hooligans. They invented hooligans.
No. Yeah. Pretty nuts.
I doubt that's the worst thing anyone's ever done.
The mom and you is saying, can't we all just get along?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Taylor Twellman tweeted King back, position. I would rather cut off my toe than root for Mexico.
And yesterday when we did the show on PTI, I looked into the camera and I said, and if he wants to cut off his toe, do it right here. Do it on PTI. Let's see you do it. We'll broadcast it.
So there you go. A bit of controversy going on with a South African sprinter by the name of Caster.
Oh, I don't
Semenya.
Think she's a sprinter. I think she's a middle distance.
Well, middle distance. I'm sorry. Misspoke there. A 27-year-old South African runner is going to issue a formal legal challenge Monday to make sure the track and field world views her as a woman. Now, this is at a new rule aimed at restricting testosterone levels in female athletes that she claims, and a lot of people are claiming, is unfair and unnecessary. She says, I just want to run naturally the way I was born. It's not fair that I'm told I must change. It's not fair that people question who I am.
This is a very, very sad circumstance. This is a world-class athlete with two Olympic gold medals. It happens that her body, she is a female, and it happens that her body produces an alarmingly high rate of testosterone, which gives her, according to medical experts and Olympic people, a tremendous advantage over...
According to some medical experts.
Right, according an advantage over other women. And I guess they're trying to get her out of the Olympics. And the stigma of all of this is heartbreaking, is it not?
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
I've read a few interviews with her, and it's so sad to read the interviews because she just wants to run.
Right.
And she's great.
I don't want to talk about this publicly. I don't want to be out front on this, but I have to be. And I think one of the things they're considering is... doing something, I guess, medically to reduce the testosterone level, which to me sounds awful, right? If that's the way she is, it's
be
just
some
so
injection
sad.
Of some sort, yeah. I would imagine. It's very sad. I mean, everywhere she goes, she's pretty much treated as look at that over there. It's really sad, and she's a great, great runner,
gold medalist.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, twice.
Yes. I have one. Well, we don't really have time to get into the Initiative 77, do we? Other than just to say
vote against it.
Vote against
it. Bad idea.
But there is one story that I think you need to hear, and that's the story of Dee Dee Phillips from Atlanta. Just about a little.
Oh, this isn't the woman who was eaten by the boa constrictor.
No, that was a story
Python.
From Indonesia. A woman went out to check her crops, had an encounter with a 23-foot Burmese python. The python won that match.
Yes. And moved on to the semis.
And moved on to the semifinals. So now we have a match here locally.
And all that was left was sandals and a machete.
Yeah, right? That was pretty much all they found. Yeah. And a big fat snake about 5 yards away from that. Dee Dee Phillips had just bought a new car and was putting a bumper sticker on her car. And lives out in rural part of Atlanta.
TK bumper sticker?
No, it was the one that said, "Women who behave rarely make history."
Right, I've seen that bumper sticker.
Yeah, it's all over the place. Yeah. And she went into the house to get a camera to take a picture of that and probably put it on social media somewhere. But then she
said, people stop putting themselves on social media for 10 seconds a day?
Have I ever gotten to use the great line? I don't know who said it, but I've now stolen it as mine. That the reason a lot of these social media sites are called things like Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram is because narcissist is just too hard to spell.
So as Phillips was coming back out, she heard
this is Dee Dee Phillips.
Dee Dee Phillips, that's right. Noticed a neighbor's dog barking. Then she saw a bobcat prowling near the car. She managed to snap a photo of the animal before it turned to her. Oops. And in her words, as soon as it took the first step, I was in trouble and I knew it. The cat jumped, its claws raging for her face. Said it caught me slightly
because the cat said, "I told you not to take pictures of me."
Yeah, is that Sonny Corleone situation?
Yeah.
Right. Caught me slightly on my face, but I got him before he could do much damage there. I took it straight to the ground and started inching my hands up to his throat. I knew that was the only way I was getting out of this. She said, "You know, where's the quote?" Yeah, Phillips and the animal. She won, killing the cat with her hands. I thought, not today.
Killed it?
Yes. There is no way I was going to die. She strangled the bobcat with her bare hands.
Wow.
Yes.
That's
and
great.
Made sure
That's
that it was
great.
Silent. She did not
Undateable.
Scream out.
That's
great. Now, she had a 5-year-old granddaughter inside that she didn't want to wake up. It might come out.
So she's a grandmother.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So that eliminates my question as to whether or not she becomes more or less dateable.
Yeah.
After,
<that's>
after she strangled the bobcat.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Dee Dee Phillips is our American hero.
Atta girl, Dee Dee.
Yes. Did you then take a selfie with it?
We'll take a break, but they're standing over it. Like
which
Teddy
means,
Roosevelt
by the way, after she choked it out of consciousness, she continued
to choke it.
Yeah, and then I guess her son came out with a knife, and they stabbed it several times to make sure it was
just finish
dead.
It off. Why?
Just to make sure it was dead.
Was
they didn't,
dead.
What was the son doing? Cowering in the house?
Well, he was probably playing video games or something like that.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with Old Guy Radio today, in which Marcus makes his debut.
You ready?
In his third week of internship, Marcus makes his day. He had to sit and listen to some kid who'd graduated from the Connecticut School of Broadcasting get on the mic yesterday, and Marcus didn't get on it. And Marcus hates that kid. I think there's no question about that. We'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is one of the greatest tunes ever written. This is Carole King's song. I think Carole King and Jerry Goffin.
That's right.
It says, "Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?" Originally recorded by the Shirelles. Just lyrically and in every way, brilliant. And since she wrote it herself, she sings it with a feeling that other people just can't possibly have. I say in the area of critical commentary. Why are we playing this?
Because on this date in 1971, Carole King's album Tapestry hit number one.
At the time, other than a Beatles album, that was probably the biggest selling album of all time, Tapestry. I think everybody bought Tapestry.
Tapestry got 4 Grammys in 72, including Album of the Year. So it was a huge, huge hit. This song was originally recorded, as you said.
This is the first time she did her own music.
Yeah, and it couldn't be more different than the Shirelles version, and it's just lovely. The Shirelles version, by the way, had the distinction in 1960 of being the first song by a black all-girl group to hit number one in the
U.S.
Is
that right?
Yes, 1960.
Hmm. Oh, good for them. Shirelles because of Shirley Ellis.
Oh, that's right, yes. Yes.
The lead
Can singer. I also offer, in the interest of Old Guy Radio, or maybe you were going
you
to
went
mention
to you
this yourself, but not that, that today is 32 years to the day from the death of Len Bias, which is
I didn't
hard
realize
to believe,
that.
But yes, sad day in local history, for sure.
And one final note about Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, and I can't figure out who covered it, but a lot of people have covered it over the years, but the closing music for the Larry Sanders Show...
Is that what it was?
They played this, and it was somebody, and please email us and tell us who it was if you know.
So it was not Carole King.
It was not Carole King. It's just a haunting version of it.
No, should know.
And it was the perfect
That was the last show that they ever did, not each week.
Yeah, no, just the
Was it Carly Simon, maybe?
No, I don't think it was. I'm not... Not sure who it was, but
You
was
did
brilliant.
Go to U2 last
I did
night.
Go to U2 How last was night, it? Yes, with Sydney and Kim. And it was good, not great. I've seen
not
them a number
acoustics.
Of times.
That gym does it not
really
have good acoustics.
Isn't. It really isn't. The acoustics are bad. And it was actually interesting because it was the first. I've been to concerts with my kid, but it's more sort of her music.
How drunk
and this
did she
is
get?
The first one that was sort of a bridge. I mean, she's very into what I would call the new U2, which she would call
what
their
does that
best
mean?
Music.
What does that mean?
Their last couple few albums.
Yeah,
you
I've lost track of them. Is Bono still saving the world?
Bono's still saving the
That's
world.
Great.
You always get a little bit of a political message when you go to a YouTube show.
Why not?
It goes with the territory, sure. But still sounds good. I mean, they still sound great. His voice is still there.
They are. I will say this: that for my generation, everybody thinks that the greatest garage band and the loudest garage band is the Who, and I think it's U2. I think they're louder and more melodic.
Yeah. Yes.
I think the songs that they wrote were they're
just great anthem, great stadium anthem just, rock. And having seen them at
amazing,
Raven having
Stadium,
seen right? them at RFK and seeing them at Raven Stadium, I mean, for me,
I still haven't found what I'm looking for. You can listen to it for hours,
just brilliant.
For hours.
Yeah.
You
so,
but you didn't you didn't love them.
Was this good? I mean, I love them. The acoustics weren't awesome. Honestly, if I was a rock critic and I'm not smart enough to be one, I would say at times they appeared a little bored to me. Yeah. Like I sort of felt like they were doing it because they could, not so much because they wanted to anymore, which was a little disappointing. But, you know, it's a Monday night, second of back-to-back shows, end of a long tour.
This is an interesting sort of concept when you're a rock and roll star and you know that you can play and sing anytime you want. They still, when they decide they're going to sing, they go on tour. Whereas what you might want to do is say, I want to sing tomorrow night. Let's go book a hall and sing tomorrow night, and that's it.
Right.
We're not going to, we've got all the money in the world. Let's just do it tomorrow night for us, and then I'll bet their show would be better.
But isn't there some, because of the ability to stream music now, because the way in which they make money has changed so much, the tours are actually more important than they were even 10, 15 years ago.
That's their money.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's flipped
over. That's their
again.
Money now. But I think they have, you can tour if you want, but I agree with Gary that at some point in a tour, you probably feel, yeah, like, I'm just going through the motions here.
Yeah.
But if you say, I want to play tomorrow night, let's go, be different.
Well, one of the things I think is great about Bruce Springsteen, I've only seen him the one time, but what I've heard about from him, and I think you probably attest to this, is that every night he plays, it feels like it's the first time he's
Bruce
playing.
Bruce Springsteen,
and
the energy
you feel
and the
like
enthusiasm.
He's giving you everything he
he's
has.
He's Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
There.
He's Michael Jordan. He wants there to be full faith and credit for the ticket that you've bought.
Yeah.
That he's Michael Jordan.
And it's that experience is just
There's no DNP. The Greg Popovich isn't resting these guys today for the next game. Springsteen gets out there, that's what he's got.
Yeah.
You get what he's got.
You know, some years ago, there was some national security conference downtown. I was working at the Pentagon, and we're down there, and someone comes up to me and said, Bono is here, and he would like to meet Secretary Rumsfeld. And I said, yeah, sure. And it was at the Hyatt or something like that. And so I walk over to the secretary, and I said, okay, look over my shoulder back behind me. I said, Bono wants to meet you. And he said, who?
Yeah.
And
I said,
you see the guy in the camo? And he goes, yeah, what's with the blue sunglasses? And I said, not sure, but he'd like to meet you. Why? I said, I think he's a fan. And he says, oh, okay. And Bono is not overly tall.
Right.
So, and
not as tall as a guitar player.
Yeah. Anyway, he comes over, and he might have even had a beret on, too. He comes over, and they have a lovely little chat about the conference or whatever, and thank you so much, and walks away. And I said, well, that was pretty cool, sir. And he goes, what's with the blue sunglasses? He was just obsessed with the blue sunglasses.
So he took the
He has significant eye problems.
Oh, is that right?
That's my understanding. But he performed a couple of songs last night without the glasses. And when he did, you realize, like, you've never seen him without the glasses.
Yeah.
Looked really, like,
he's very
unusual.
At the time, I don't even remember what the issues were or what the topic of the conference, but he's quite knowledgeable.
Oh, yeah. No, he is.
Has he not been nominated
he's done more good than harm.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
No,
I mean, that's the circle he runs in, and there's legitimacy to it.
You know
it.
The old joke, Tony, what's the difference between Bono and God? God doesn't walk around the streets of Dublin acting like he's Bono. that's the old Bono good. Joke.
All right,
by the way, it was Sean Colvin who sang the Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow at the end of Larry David's show.
So we've delayed and delayed and delayed getting Marcus on... on the air here. Marcus.
We out of time?
No. Present yourself. Tell us why you're here and tell us what you do for a living and tell us what your goals are. Because you've been our intern for the third week now.
Okay, I'm a sophomore at Syracuse University, majoring in broadcast and digital journalism with a focus in sports, obviously.
What in God's name is digital journalism? Exactly. I know what journalism is. What's digital journalism?
Uses your fingers.
Use your finger digits. And your toes?
I guess so. And multimedia storytelling, all of that, because you have to adjust to the times.
I don't.
I guess you don't.
I don't. I'm old.
We're being trained.
I got my flag planted right here. I'm not moving. Yeah.
I mean, that's a fair point.
Let him talk.
So, yeah, I'm just here just to learn, shadow, enjoy my summer, freshman year.
Have you learned anything here?
I mean, I have my own radio show at school, so being energetic, constantly make it entertaining, at least. You don't want to be boring. You have to move people, whether it's making them cry, disagree. You have to do something. So that's what I'm learning here.
Well, how about the free breakfast that you get? That's good, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, love it.
All right, so we have a task for you.
This is the first big task for this Marcus.
Marcus has learned one thing. He declared himself a sophomore. I think one of the first times we spoke, he said, well, I'm a rising sophomore. He said, no, none of that nonsense.
You're a sophomore
now.
You're
a sophomore.
Yeah. Yeah. You're wearing the right shirt.
Once the previous term ends,
yeah,
you go to the next
exactly,
term.
Right.
You're a sophomore.
Right. Well done.
Why
Marcus.
Did you want to go to Syracuse? Saliza hates Syracuse. Why did you want to go to Syracuse?
Broadcasting. I've always been a writer, and I know a lot of writers end up transitioning to broadcast. So Syracuse was one of the best spots for that.
Did you consider ever Northwestern?
I did not. It was really between University of Missouri, of Missouri and Syracuse.
Where are you from?
I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. So it's a really, really cold up there.
The University of Missouri produced John Walsh, who created SportsCenter at ESPN. Also, didn't Pat Forty? Isn't Pat Forty a Mizzou guy?
Mizzou?
I think Pat's a Mizzou guy. I'm not exactly sure.
I know Wright
sure
Thompson
about.
Went there.
Wright Thompson's
John
terrific.
Anderson, a bunch of guys came out of there.
Yeah, so that's good. But you wanted Syracuse. It's so cold in the winter.
Oh, it's terrible. The wind is the worst part. Like, they clear out all the snow, but the wind, when you're walking to class for 10 minutes and it's blowing in your face, it's... I mean, I can't even describe it.
And they also think dinosaur is good barbecue, right?
Oh, it's not.
Which
it's not at all.
Have you palled around with Boeheim at all? Have you met Jim Boeheim?
I have. I had a press conference early in the season for the Colgate game, and he actually snapped on someone who asked some ridiculous question, which that was my first ever press conference. So seeing that was pretty intimidating because that was my first ever press conference. And for me to... like have to ask a question and I see him snap. I mean, that just
he could have done it to you too.
Oh yeah, totally.
He does it to everybody. You shouldn't worry too much about it.
That's nothing. Wait till you screw up this hockey stick run. Yeah, and you'll see a real angry man.
We'll get to that in a second. So who of the Syracuse people, who would you say? Who are the three or four or five where you say I'd like to be like them? Like, do you want to be a play-by-play guy?
Talk radio, honestly.
You'd rather do that. So you'd rather be your boy Adam Schein. Than right. Marv Albert.
Right. I mean, it.
You know
honestly,
how much money
I don't
Marv
know.
Albert Steve has Levy. Made over the years?
I love Tirico. I mean, he's just full of class. He's a great guy. Can really do it all. I mean, a bunch of guys from Syracuse can do it. Bob Costas, he comes back a lot to talk
good.
To us.
Who?
But anything. I don't know exactly where I want to be.
So you don't want to end up as the overnight manager of a Wawa someplace.
Correct. Ooh. I'm just trying to find my niche.
Well, this is your task. We have gotten the stick that Braden Holtby used to make the save that changed the fortune of the Stanley Cup. That stick is autographed by Braden Holtby. You have to go get that stick. If you don't get, don't come back. If you don't have the stick, I don't ever want to see you again. Now, how do you intend to do this?
I'm going to Uber straight to Kettler Ice Pavilion right after
Where
this.
Is Kettler? Kettlerville.
Yes, in Kettlerville.
East Kettlerville.
Kettlerburg, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like Arlington, Virginia, so I think it's about a 30-minute ride. Get down there.
Depends
go to
on the time
front
of day.
Desk,
yeah.
Say I'm the intern of the Tony Kornheiser Show. Pick it up. Be here first thing.
Have to identify yourself. I've given them your name. You have to identify yourself.
Because anyone could now go say they're
That's
the intern.
Right. That's well, true. No, because this doesn't drop till 11.
There's people here, though.
Well, the people
One guy
here
just
could
left.
Do that. The people here could do that, but we'd have them killed.
And then how will you package? Have you thought
out
your package?
We want to put the stick up. We want to put the stick up in chatter.
It's a holy relic.
This is the important thing.
It's a holy relic.
Is this poor intern going to be responsible for this overnight?
Absolutely.
I don't think that's a good idea.
He's got to sleep with it. He's got to guard it.
He has to bring it back.
Bring it back immediately?
Yeah.
He can do that if you want. I'm just saying, if you don't come back with the stick, don't come back. Right? You can understand that.
I'll be back.
This is a big task. We haven't asked you to do anything but eat to this point.
He's done that well.
He has done it very well.
We haven't put you on the air. You must, to be fair, you must be seething that you've been here, watched this garbage show for almost 3 weeks, and we put every dope in America on the air, and we haven't put you on, and you have qualifications.
I mean, it is what it is, but...
What if that's exactly... He's angry. Yesterday. He's so angry.
I'm trying to...
Have your relatives, have they at least said to you, when is he going to put you on the air?
They have. I've been getting texts every day, but I'm just settling down. I'm just doing my job, as Bill Belichick would say, and just waiting on the moment.
There is no job here.
And there's no moment.
There's no moment coming.
No, that's
it. Look.
This is as good as it's going
to
be.
We do the job. There is no job. Like, your internship is just to hang out.
Fetch the stick.
Stick. This is the one thing that we've got. This is very important. This is the turning point in your career, I believe.
You got this, Marcus.
I think
you can
do this.
By the way, Pat Forty, indeed a graduate of the University of Missouri.
Of course.
They're loaded with celebrities. John Hamm, Brad Pitt, Sheryl Crow.
Yes.
Robert Loggia. It's unbelievable.
No. The University of Missouri is a good school.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of schools in the Big Eight or whatever they call that thing these days. I mean, I think that's considered the best academic institution in that conference, I think.
I was unaware.
Yeah.
In what conference? The SEC? Because that's where...
Missouri left the Pac-8 or the Big 8?
Whatever it was.
They're not in the Big 8 anymore, the Big 12, whatever they call it. So now they're in the SEC?
Yes.
So what else would be in the SEC that would be...
Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt would probably be better.
Oh, yeah.
Academically, Vanderbilt would probably... Florida's
not
good
bad academically.
Georgia
is quite good these days.
Does it bother you that Syracuse is perhaps the 20th best school in the New York State? Because I can list some schools. I mean, do you have Binghamton envy? Because, I mean, we just crush you academically. You crush us in all other areas. But academically.
But for sports broadcast.
We own you.
Sports broadcast, it's where you want to go.
No, it is. Yeah. It's very, very good. Syracuse, Missouri. If it was straight journalism and not broadcast, Columbia certainly would be number one.
Sure.
Wilbon will make the case for Kellogg School. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that that's broad. I think Syracuse in broadcast is one. I do. Is there any... What else?
There would seem to be. Certainly got that reputation. Yeah, I'm not sure.
So when you got into Syracuse, you must have been very happy.
I was, but it was a tough decision. My sister was at the University of Missouri, so she's 4 years older. So if I had gone to Missouri...
Cheaper than the other. Missouri, much cheaper than Syracuse.
And a nice greased wheel there, too. She'd done all the pre-scouting for you.
Yeah, it was a really tough decision. Every day my mind would change. Like, do I want to go to Missouri where I'm closer to home? Do I want to go to Syracuse where the weather is just...
Where are you from?
Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis. Do you have an inn at Rendezvous?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Is it the Vagos family that owns
Vergas family? Yeah.
Well, have you not gotten us barbecue yet?
It's
ribs?
On the way. It's on
task
the way.
Number two. Stop
two after you
Forget
pick up the stick.
Forget the stick.
I'll place the order tonight.
Those are the greatest ribs in America. They're the best. Even though there are some people in Memphis who tell me no, that there are others that are better, I haven't had anything better than those. I'm happy. This kid has wasted our time for close to 3 weeks.
It's unbelievable
now.
We're finding this
from
out now.
From Memphis? Wow. Now let's get out of here. We'll come back with an email and a jingle.
That's
fine. I don't really have. I mean, I was going to have dinner with Brent last night. I did go to the Palm last night. I saw Eric.
What'd you get?
I had a soft shell crab. I was very happy to have a soft shell crab.
A single?
I had one. Well, Brent had. I had some of the steak that Brent. The check was very, very light. I don't know what to make of this. It was like eating a chatter. I mean, it was much less expensive than I thought, and I probably under tipped, and I don't really understand what happened. So if Eric is listening, if I owe you some more money, I'm happy to take care of it. And then I was going to talk about the father-son tournament where I failed miserably, but I can't.
We'd like to hear about that.
I can't bear to do that today. Can't bear to do that today. We'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yeah. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all you folks.
It's as good as ever, Gary. As good as ever.
Sounds brilliant.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Brian Windhorst for coming on with us today. I'd also like to thank today's sponsors. MeUndies is typed correctly, but Feast Leaf Wines. So it has to be First Leaf Wines. Try First Leaf Wines. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Let me thank Sean for fixing the board so that we could actually do the show today. We were very, very lucky. From Brock in Kensington, Maryland. Hey, Billy Bean. Last week you were talking about Matt Harvey and said he was doing well with the Reds. In his past three starts, he's 0-2 with an ERA of 7.16.
Yeah,
and his team has lost all three games. Way to have your facts straight, Grandpa. You should leave the baseball analysis to Mr. Avocado. And it's signed Edith Saliza. He's an angry young man.
Yeah, Rocky Kensington. A lot of anger there.
Tim Cree in Fort Collins, Colorado. I named my World Cup bracket Egypted Me. Maybe I should have gone with I'm a Guay Uruguay. That's very funny. I'm a Guay Uruguay is very funny. I didn't think it through. Mike in Burke, Virginia. I would like to offer to send both you and Wilbon a string of pearls. That way, the next time some golf event causes you to both fan yourselves and collapse onto your respective fainting couches, you'll at least have a string of pearls to clutch. Spare me. Spare me the sanctimony. Given that the rules of golf are as impenetrable as the freaking Rosetta Stone, we should give Phil credit for knowing the penalty and pulling the mini golf move right then and there. He was 75 over. The next time a Cub gets caught with his hand in some sort of baseball cookie jar, I look forward to Wilbon demanding his head on a pike. Mike from Burke, Virginia. He gets it right. He gets it right, even when
tough
he attacks me.
Yeah,
tough Will fair. In Nashville, like Wilbon, I'm not surprised every hit song's origin story ends with, and it only took me 5 minutes to write it. Both emails I've ever had read on this show, my personal equivalent to having a hit record, each took me 5 minutes to write. So here's hoping these 5 minutes haven't been wasted. From Andrew Lacey in Scottsbluff, Nebraska. Soccer fans are snobbish? You just spent half a show practically calling for Phil Mickelson's arrest just because he did something most of us have either done or wanted to do at some point. Now that's sanctimony. David in Colorado Springs. Dr. Hoffer Waffer, I wanted to give a belated warning to all the littles coming to D.C. for the Mr. Tony experience. Last Mother's Day weekend, I flew in to celebrate the adoption of my niece Alana to my brother. He picked me up at BWI, and we were headed to his home with not a lot of time for lunch. We didn't think we had enough time for the official for-profit restaurant of the Tony Kornheiser Show, but I had to have the T-shirt, so we stopped in, bought two T-shirts, and headed for Damascus. We decided, not Syria, by the way, we decided to hit the food trucks 2 blocks away for a quicker lunch. Don't do this, littles. I spent $9.50 for a chicken sandwich where every ingredient came from Walmart that morning, and it took 12 minutes to make. How long does it take to microwave a chicken patty? I can't tell you the regret I have for that decision. I could have just gotten the Chatterburger for $12, and I bet it would have been prepared faster. Indeed, I am parenthetically.
Great burgers.
Don't make the same mistake we did. Eat a Chatter, Littles Helping Littles. P.S. I've worn the shirt 3 times without getting a single salute. The Colorado Springs Littles are weak. If you're coming out to the Broadmoor for the U.S. Senior Open, you'll probably have to use an exemption. You can crash on my couch. From Jerry Negrelli. The doors to Jam and Java open at 6 p.m. this Saturday, with the show to begin at approximately 7. We welcome any and all friends of the show who'd like to attend. There's a rear entry for convenience. Otherwise, you're welcome to enter through the general admission area at the front, and your names will be on a list. Where is Jam and Java?
It's in Vienna.
Jam and Java. No, Vienna, Virginia.
Vienna, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
I'll be there. Nigel'll be there.
From Mercer, Pennsylvania. That Barry Trotz has resigned, you will not have to learn his name. I understand that Brian Trotz will become the next coach. From Nicholas Messalella in Providence, Rhode Island. Sorry to do this to you, but you can't take any more Fridays off. I'm going to actually be here this Friday. Yeah. I like to listen to the Friday show at work Monday morning. When there isn't a show, it throws off my whole day. Happened last Monday, happened again today, so you'll need to work Fridays. The good news is I'm on vacation the week of July 23rd, so feel free to take that whole week off.
Okay.
And if I get any more time off, I'll be sure to let you know, so it's not all bad news. P.S. Really? You want to name drop Vasco da Gama as your explorer of choice? Pretend you're smarter than everyone else. You went to Binghamton. It's basically a glorified junior college. It's NYU's idiot cousin. Oh. How about you just say Christopher F. Columbus and move on?
Wow.
That email took a turn.
These people are watering with anger today.
Mike Vormantik in Toronto. Did you happen to catch the final leaderboard at the U.S. Open? First place was plus one, second plus two, third was plus three, fourth plus four, fifth plus five, and you guessed it, the tie for sixth place was at plus six. I'll add parenthetically that I plan to be a chatter on Breakfast Friday as part of the Total Jingle Fest experience. Well, to you and everyone else, then, if you're out on your bike tonight, do wear white.
Great cash, homie.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
move.